That old belief that life is suffering is the first noble truth. It keeps coming back from the dead. You point out the fact that the Buddha never said that. And if life is suffering, then what's the cure going to be? Dying? The Buddha was more specific. Suffering is the five clinging aggregates. And this is something you can deal with. Because clinging is something you do. The aggregates are things that you do as well. Which means if you want to put an end to suffering, you stop clinging to the aggregates. Turns out the aggregates without the clinging are not suffering. So you can still live after the end of suffering. Still there's some confusion. It seems to be in the texts. But if you read carefully, you realize the texts are not confused. The passages where clinging is defined as passion and desire for the aggregates. Other passages where craving, which is the cause of suffering, the cause of clinging, is also defined as passion and desire. Where is the line between the two? Because the two have different duties associated with them. Clinging is to be comprehended. In other words, you understand that the clinging to the five aggregates is the suffering. The craving is to be abandoned. Here you can think about the words in Pali for craving and clinging. Clinging, upadana, can also mean feeding. Craving, tanha, can also mean thirst, which is a stand-in for hunger. It's the hunger that drives us to feed. And as we're feeding, it's not the case that the hunger goes away immediately as we stop feeding. The hunger is there in the act of feeding. So there will be craving in the clinging. As the Buddha points out, where there's passion and desire for the aggregates, the passion and desire is to be abandoned. So that part of the complex is to be abandoned. The whole complex of feeding on the aggregates, that's to be comprehended. This is something you can investigate now, because if you don't investigate it now, it's going to drive you from this life to the next one. When they say that life is suffering, they've got it wrong in the sense that the suffering actually happens before life begins. You're stuck in your old body. You can't stay there any longer. As it was said, at that point, what are you clinging to as you leave? And you're clinging to the craving itself. The image he gives is of fire. In those days, they felt that fire needed something to cling to. So the question was, how does the fire get from one object to an object far away? It clings to the wind. Same way you cling to the craving that would drive you. As long as you haven't learned how to abandon that craving, it can take you anywhere. You're not safe. So we'll look into how this all goes together right here, right now. You've got a hunger, the craving. As the Buddha said, it's around that hunger, around that desire, that becoming forms. Now, clinging is the intermediate stage between the craving and the becoming. As we mentioned the other day, there are four kinds of clinging. Even though you're clinging to the aggregates, oftentimes you're not aware of the aggregates themselves. You're more aware of what you're creating out of those aggregates. The same way that when you're drinking water, you're drinking hydrogen and oxygen. But you don't feel hydrogen, you don't feel oxygen, you feel the water. Water is what you see. But the hydrogen and oxygen are in there. Now as you crave, you're looking for something. There's the desire for pleasure there. So you just cling to your ideas of how that pleasure can be found. This is our clinging to sensuality, our fantasizing and planning for sensual pleasures. And then your view about the world in which that object can be found. That's clinging to views. your ideas about how you can act within that world in order to get what you want. That's clinging to habits and practices. And then there's your idea of yourself, who's capable or not capable of finding that pleasure. That's the fourth kind of clinging. And these are things we're very, very, very familiar with. We hold to them very tightly. Because if you're going to find your pleasures, you want to have a clear sense of what the world is like, how you have to act in that world, and who you are in terms of your abilities to get or not get what you're looking for. These are the things that create becoming, which is why they say craving leads to clinging, clinging conditions becoming. Then it's from becoming that birth happens. In other words, you actually go into those things. You go into that act of feeding. You try to take in that food. And that's when there's birth. That's when life begins. So life comes about as a result of suffering. But once you're here, we don't have to continue suffering. Our problem is that we keep up the process all the time. That image of the fire going from the house, it applies to the mind in this body right here, right now, in this life. We keep going for this, going for that. We get frustrated here, frustrated there, we try something else. We get what we want, we consume it, and then we're looking for more. That's what we're going to see as we meditate, these things that we're doing right here, how our thirst leads us to come up with ideas about what we want, where we can find it, what we have to do, who we are. We keep on doing those things. That's the clinging, which creates the becoming, the world in which we're going to be born. And then the birth happens. This, by the way, helps to answer a question that comes up sometimes. The Buddha's teaching us all the time to be focused on our actions. And it discourages people from speculating about the world. So some people say that the idea of a Buddhist cosmology is a contradiction in terms. We shouldn't be speculating about where we could be reborn or what kinds of levels of rebirth there might be. Just focus on what we're doing right now. Well, yes, we focus on what we're doing right now, but one of the reasons we're doing that is not because that's the only reality there is. It's because what we're doing right now creates new worlds. In the case of samsara, samsara is not a place. Samsara is an activity by which places are created and then thrown away as we create more places. So the distinction between action and worldviews is not absolute. In fact, they're very much connected. It's how you act that creates a worldview. The Buddha does discourage speculation about karma, speculation about the world. But it doesn't mean he throws both concepts aside. It's giving us the views we need to get out of this whole process. And so part of those views have to do with what he says, the fact that there is this world and the next world, and they are related to our karma. We want to know how, so we can have some ideas about what we should and shouldn't be doing, where our desires should and shouldn't be focused. If you focus in the wrong places, you can create worlds that are full of suffering, even though they're your creation. The fact that you get in there and experience them, you're responsible for that. You intended that, not knowing what you're intending. That's all relevant to the teaching on karma. The Buddha discourages speculation about karma. He's discouraging the kind of speculation that says, well, why is it that this particular event happened here, right here, right now, to me? If you try to trace things back, you go crazy. Karma is very complex in its workings out, but in its basic principle, and which the principle is what the Buddha teaches, is that you act on skillful intentions and you get good results. You act on unskillful intentions, you get bad results. And you can learn how to make your intentions skillful by starting with acting on the best intentions you can think of. And when you find the results are not good, you talk it over with those who are more advanced in the path. You reflect on what you did, where it might be wrong, where there was some delusion even in your good intention. That's how you learn. This is what the Buddha taught to Rahula, and it applies all the way through the path. That's the kind of things you need to know about karma. Same about worlds. But it lays out the fact that if your actions are totally pure, you go to the really high levels of heaven. If they're mixed, it depends on the mixture. Some mixes will take you to the animal realm. Some mixes will take you to the lower deva realms, depending on how many skillful and unskillful actions are mixed in your background. And the really totally bad mixtures, those take you down far into hell. That's all you really need to know. When you look at what the Buddha has to say about the universe and the cosmos, he doesn't go into a lot of details. A couple of gruesome passages about hell, till you realize this is not a place you want to go. But passages about heaven are very vague. Here a few details, here and there. Indra's palace is one of them. And he's not even on the highest level of the devas. Because all we need to know is what will guide us to do good things and avoid bad things. Those complete maps of the cosmos, those don't come in the suttas. They come later. But the fact that the Buddha discourages speculation about the world means he discourages speculation beyond what he teaches. All you need to know is the basic principle. That's enough to guide you. So what you're doing is creating states of becoming. You start out with a thirst for pleasure. And then around that thirst, you find something to feed on. And the way you feed is what creates the four kinds of clinging. Those four kinds of clinging then will create the becoming, the world in which you want to act to find that pleasure. And then comes birth. You go into that world. You do this as you go from life to life. You do this as you go from thought world to thought world. And in fact, it's the habit of going from thought world right here that prepares you for the kind of life you're going to go to when this life ends. So the suffering is in the clinging to the aggregates. And in that clinging to the aggregates, there is passion and desire. That's the craving. That's what has to be abandoned. It's when you comprehend all this that you know precisely what needs to be abandoned. That helps keep your practice on target. The rest of the information there is to give you a sense of the importance of keeping your practice on target. It literally makes a world of difference.